located at 2106 Park Avenue in Chico. Affordable Automotive has pickup and delivery service with financing available. Appointments at 892-1774 and at chicoautomotive.com. Affordable Automotive is also looking for technicians to join their team. Call Mike Button at 892-1774 for details. And hey, if you enjoyed Fresh Hop Cinema, you can now go to kzfr.org and tip this show.
Hi there. You are listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. However, our program tonight is not very controversial. I interviewed in a two-part series local, Chico, long-term, family-owned businesses. I'm really impressed with three, four, five generation family-owned businesses. So tonight, we're going to hear my interviews with Northern Star Mills, which you know is across from Bidwell Mansion, has great floors, Collier's Hardware, across from Tres Hombres, where Bidwell himself, John, used to have offices, also with great old floors, and Bruzy Funeral Homes. So if you're interested in the three that I did last month, all the video interviews are on my YouTube channel. So you just search Gail Kimball, YouTube, and you will see them. Also on that channel are interviews I'm doing with men for a new book on men's changing roles, men's viewpoints of masculinity, and interviews that I'm doing with young feminist girls and women around the world for another new book, and interviews that I've done with visionary scientists. So it's kind of an eclectic, interesting website. I wanted to let you know about another resource in Chico, in case you don't. Shalom Free Clinic is every Sunday afternoon, 1010 Mangrove, and that's where the doctors and nurses are. And what I love about Shalom Free Clinic is it is free. There are no fees, no money changes hand. And they also have collected food and clothes for people who need food and clothes. And then every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m., myself and Elizabeth, I do chakra balancing, little mini readings. Elizabeth does Reiki, and that's every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m., 1010 Mangrove, it's drop-in. And if you're interested in Reiki, Elizabeth and I are teaching a Reiki 1 class on November 13th. So if you're interested in knowing more about that, you could email me, gkimball at csuchico.edu. I'll spell it, G-K-I-M-B-A-L-L at csuchico.edu. And I'd also like to hear from you if you listen to the show and if you have topics that you would really like to hear about. So let's see what we can hear from our businesses. And I am here. And we should hear it play. We've got it, computer audio. Let's see what's happening.
Hi, I'm John Groudon with Northern Star Mills. I'm the third generation of ownership of Northern Star Mills. Northern Star Mills started in 1898. That was at 16th and Chestnut. They had a mill there, and they manufactured feed and flour. And in 1928, my grandfather bought it.
This is the highest volume.
Who was the original
founder? Owner? I don't know. So the records on that end, on the mill, are kind of murky, or they're not there.
And this was your mother's father who bought the mill?
Bought the business, yeah. He was born in the valley, and he'd been in the feed business. He worked for Depew Warehouses, I think, down in Arbuckle. And then he had a chance to buy the mill in 1928. And then he bought our warehouse, where we're at now, in 1930. But they were separate businesses when he bought them. And the mill bought local grains and made feed and also flour. They quit making flour in the late 1930s because a couple reasons. One was bagged bread or pre-made bread became available, so people quit buying big bags of flour for their home baking. And also the Depression. So I think those things played in.
Did your mother play a part in the business?
Not at all. Only that she married my father. And then my grandfather lured my father up here to work.
Right, I remember. He was John as well.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about this store, is that I felt familiar with your father, John, and you, John, and Dusty, and Rudy. And if you go to a big box store, I've never seen those people before. It takes 15 minutes before I can find someone to answer a question. So I really love this idea of a small local business that's been in the family for generations. It's kind of unique. How did you get lured into it?
I think I worked here a little bit when I was in high school. I certainly didn't think it's what I wanted to do. It was hot and sweaty, and I thought I wanted to do something more exciting. I went to Davis. I wanted to be a vet, and I applied to vet school several times. I didn't get in, so I came back, and I was back in Chico, and then my dad said, why don't you come to work for me? And that was over 40 years ago, and I've been here ever since.
Has your vet training been useful, I imagine?
Yeah, a little bit. Sort of, it gives a sort of a broad... I wasn't trained as a vet. I majored in biology. But it gave me a sort of a broad scientific understanding of things as far as, you know, animal nutrition and maybe fertilizers and things like that.
Right. How many employees do you have now, and is that kind of the average?
Yeah, I think we have 8 employees, and that's been about the average for quite a while. Our business is steady. We're real lucky. We have great customers who, like you, appreciate, you know, a family business and a local business, and we have a lot of support. And there's not a lot of us left.
No.
Yeah.
The only ones that I could think of is Collier's, and then Schubert's, I saw, has been in business since 1938. Uh-huh. Are there other businesses that you know of that are family, long-term ownership?
Not in the retail sector, no. No. So that's...
How have you changed management style, if at all, from your father and your grandfather? Has it evolved in some ways?
My grandfather was always in charge of the mill, and so that was a separate entity. He worked there until he was 90.
Wow.
So he was a pretty amazing guy, but we were here, my father and I both worked at the store here, and we got along very well, and the management style, I guess, is pretty informal, and it's always been that way, and it's worked out okay so far.
You know, I don't see women as employees. Is that because they don't want to lift heavy seed bags, or what's the deal with
that? You know, I think we've had 4 women employees. And certainly being able to lift hay, which is the heaviest product we sell, is one of the factors you have to do to work. And it's tough. And most people, male or female, don't want to or can't lift lots of bales of hay. So that's...
There's that song about 15 bales of hay, lifting it. It's some folk song. It made me think of that.
It's tough work.
Yeah. So are there benefits like health insurance, or is that too expensive for a small business?
For full-time employees, we have health insurance, but we do have, a profit-sharing plan.
Oh. Yeah. So at the end of the year, they get a little...
They get a bonus, which can be put into a 401k. Yes.
Oh, great. That's good. Have you noticed any erosion from, like, internet sales like Amazon or the big box stores, or has that not touched you?
It has. I mean, I've been here for quite a while, and I think originally we were worried about pet food. We sell a lot of pet food now. Pet food, that was an area where we dominated, going to grocery stores and things, and then it was big box, and now it's internet. So there's always been a lot of competition. Internet is certainly very real, and especially with, you know, younger people, they seem to go into using the internet or getting from Amazon or Chili's very easily. So that's a big deal. But so far, we've been able to compete.
Oh, that's great. Where are there any plans for where you want to take it in the future, or have you established something that works really well and you're happy with it?
Yeah, I think we're just pretty steady at this point. So just sort of focusing on our customers and what they want. You know, we have changed. We used to sell a lot more feed, and now we sell a lot more pet food. I mean, you know, Chico's become a lot more urbanized or grown up around us. So it's really just getting what our customers want. We also sell a lot of, like, organic gardening supplies. And that's, you know, people want to do that. So.
Mm. What I like is I can come in and say, my cat is spitting up hairballs. What do you suggest? And I can't do that on Amazon.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to show us some of these pictures of the original?
Sure. Let's see here. This is the... Is that a...
So you are listening to KZFR 90.1 FM. This is the Ask Dr. Gale show. It's on the second Thursday each month from 6 to 7 p.m. Next month, we're going to have an interview with Ashanti Branch, who leads groups for boys of color in the Bay Area and had a really interesting growing up tale to tell as well. Ask Dr. Gale is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by Paradise Community Guilds, fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guilds invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help carry out that intent. To get involved, visit paradiseguilds.org, also on Facebook, and at 762-1490. And back to small...
After our RM a few days ago, and she's good. In San Diego, so that's what she's doing. Yeah.
Let's see
this. This is a gentleman loading grain into a rail car. And so we have a rail siding out in the front. That's why we have the dock. And so
John's
we used to act as a grain broker.
History of Northern Star Mills.
You buy grain locally.
My YouTube channel.
And then sell it, and it would go down to Stockton or San Francisco. And then they would also, our warehouse originally built by the Spray Flour Company, and they would buy wheat here and grind it next door where the apartments are. And then they would store the flour here, and then they would also ship the wheat and the flour off to San Francisco.
But obviously there's just no train have access to those rails now.
No, they pulled the rails out. Yeah, yeah. This is a picture of a bag of wheat flour, and we have some T-shirts that use one of the logos off that. But we quit making wheat in the late 30s. And this is a picture in the back of our warehouse, and you can see it's just all bags of grain stacked up. And I think there were 110-pound bags at that time.
Wow!
And they're stacked up like 20 feet, and it's just amazing how neat and tidy that was. And that's my mother and my grandfather and one other person in there.
Wow. And how does one deal with rodents and insects and those moths that eat grain?
Oh, yes. Rodents, you know, it seems like whether we want to or not, there's usually a cat in the warehouse. And so the cats usually take care of the rodents.
Oh, good.
Yeah. The grain weevils or any of mill moths, those come out in the late summer. And so we just have to make sure that the product is rotated and, you know, turn it over to prevent that. So those are the two big challenges.
Mm-hmm. How do you handle, or do you ever have grumpy, irritable customers? Or are they always nice and polite?
99% are nice and polite. Occasionally you get a customer that just wants, you can't seem to agree with. We try and please everybody, but occasionally you can't. And
then how do you handle them?
Each one has its own path. You try and explain your point of view and what's going on, and maybe they get mad and they go on Yelp and write a nasty write-up or something like that. But that's very rare. Yeah. The old adage in retail is the customer's always right.
Mm. So 40 years from now, when maybe you're not running the business, how do you see it, the ownership, if your daughter's not interested as a nurse?
I have a wonderful manager, and he's certainly capable of taking over the business. So that could be a thing. I certainly like to see Northern Star keep going. So
yeah, absolutely. Anything else you'd like people to know about Northern Star Mills?
I just really appreciate all the community support. It's a two-way street where we wouldn't be here without a lot of regular customers that come back every year. So.
Like me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's an old funeral home. Our business, Bidwell Chapel, goes back, and it's changed names over the years.
Now we're talking
Bicknell,
to Bruzy
Bicknell family
funeral home.
Owned it for, I don't know how many years, a long, long time. And so that's downtown. I think that's on Broadway. I'm not sure what building that is. And before that, it was called Fetters and Williams. And Fetters and Williams started in 1880.
Wow. What's this middle one?
That's the same building.
He's showing pictures that the public can see. They're on the wall of the funeral home.
I think the sign.
And this was a funeral home.
It was furniture and undertaking. If you see the sign, furniture and undertaking.
Mm.
So that was probably a furniture maker that made coffins.
Oh, right.
And that coffin business would develop into a funeral home or undertaking business.
And how far back does this go again? What year, roughly?
Fetters and Williams would have been 1880, and that probably would have been 1890. Maybe right around the turn of the century.
Wow. And this is a stagecoach. Is it like a hearse?
That is a hearse. I think the second one in the line there is the funeral carriage or the hearse coach. But that's got to be a picture of Bidwell's funeral.
Wow.
Just by the number of wagon, carriages.
Mm.
They just keep going back. You can't even see the end of them.
Do you have any idea when he died? I don't remember.
No idea.
Like late?
He died 1900.
Annie gave
I know now.
The park in 1905, and that was after he died.
Yeah, I think he died in the late 1800s, and she died around 1910, I want to say.
Interesting. And these are old signs.
This probably would have been on the side of a wagon or a funeral coach.
Oh, wow.
Fetters and Williams, that was the first funeral home in Chico.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became H.C. Bicknell. And that sign stayed on the building there at Bidwell Chapel on 3rd and Normal Street.
Mm-hmm.
Until the state made us take it down. We were out of compliance with our license if we advertised another name of a funeral home. And so, while it was a historic sign of the original mm-hmm. builder of that building in right. the 1920s. We had to take it down.
Wow. How did you get a hold of these? Oh, because it was They've on your building. There. Yeah, They've it was there.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Thanks. Apple. And this is where services are held?
It is.
And who usually officiates?
Whoever the family wants.
Does the Bruzy help out with that if they don't have someone?
Yeah, we have some people that we can call on that we work with on a regular basis. So.
Got it.
And if they have their own clergy, we call the clergy for them to arrange that.
Oh, my goodness. And these are for all the choices for cremation.
Yeah, those are all hers.
For my mother, I used a lettuce container.
Oh, sure. Anything will do.
Okay, so let me send Mark Bruzy. Thank you for talking with me. I am so impressed that in modern times you could have a family of three generations, your grandfather, 1942, your father, you, who are in the same business. How does that happen? It's really unusual.
It's unusual, but it's not terribly unusual for a funeral business to go on for generations.
Oh.
It's not uncommon. And there are some that are fourth and fifth generation, probably on the East Coast more so than here. You know, our history isn't that old here on the West Coast.
And why is that?
Why is it that it stays in the business, in the family? Well, by our nature, I think our businesses are stable.
People die.
Typically don't have good years and bad years. It's pretty much steady, and as long as you don't do a bad job, people will continue to use your service. And so I think that's one reason. It's not something that has gone out of style, funerals, or the need for someone to handle the remains is still needed by consumers and has been. So until that changes, it'll be a pretty steady business. And I think another thing that makes it stay in a family is that there's not a tremendous amount of people who want to be in the business. So if you've grown up in it, it's kind of natural for you to be in the business. You're not afraid of it. And whereas, you know, the general public, this wouldn't rate very high on their list of careers. So I think that's another reason that it tends to stay in the family.
I wanted to ask you something a little bit tangential, which is people really struggle with how to comfort someone who's had a recent loss of someone they love. And I wonder, you've done a lot of that. What do you find is helpful, especially if you don't know the person really well? I'm sorry for your loss. I don't know. What seems to be comforting?
I'm not sure people need small comforts. They need to be close to family and friends, close friends. I think there's a tremendous value in having a service, and people can be uplifted by the presence of people who were very close to the deceased. We're kind of getting away from that. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but people who have lost someone are very receptive to and I just said they don't need small condolences, but like a card, I don't think of that as really a very small thing. You've got to take time to write something, put it on paper, put a stamp on the envelope and mail it, and people who have just lost someone appreciate that kind of effort to do that. A post on social media, I think, is one of those like throwaway kind of things that I don't think is really of much value to someone that's lost someone, but those things like receiving a plant or a dish that someone cooked and is brought to the house are things that are very much appreciated.
And what people don't know what to say, so do you have some suggestions for something that conveys meaning that can be heartfelt?
No, I don't think there's a secret to that. Mm. We all are the same. We don't know what to say. Mm. And so if I've lost someone and I come across to you and you are trying to say something, I know the position that you're in and the difficulty that you have for finding the right words. And just the fact that you're trying to struggle to say something kind to me, I know and feel where you're coming from. So there's no secret magic word to be said. It's just something that we all go through, and so we all know and can tell when someone means well for us. So if you mean well for someone who's lost someone, they'll know it.
Okay, be sincere. Mm-hmm. What I find is that I'm really thrilled when I come across something that my mother wrote that's handwriting. Yeah. And I just come across like a little postcard, or someone is going through their things and found a letter she sent them. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage everybody to write in their handwriting something meaningful to leave behind for them.
Yeah.
For their family members.
Sure.
Your grandfather, there's a lot of Warrens in your family. So Warren P. came to Chico after studying at the College of Mortuary Sciences in San Francisco?
True.
And what does one learn? Because you went to that same school as well.
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Your father did?
He did. He went to San Francisco, yeah.
And what does one learn there? Like the business part, the human relations part, what is everything?
I think they do teach all of that, but the big thing that someone gets from that is the embalming, the ability to, the knowledge how to embalm and a license to embalm. Mm. That's the main reason that people go to mortuary college.
Mm. And does one require to do that before you put a body in a coffin and put it in the ground?
Not necessarily.
Ah.
No. Embalming is for like long-term storage. Let's say we have to keep someone for a couple months for someone to return to the country for the service. So we would probably embalm for that purpose. If the body is going to go in a mausoleum crypt, so inside a building, above ground, embalming is almost always required for that. To put on an airplane to ship, we almost always have to.
So you're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM. Our pledge drive is coming up pretty soon, so get out your checkbooks or credit cards. You're listening to Ask Dr. Gale. It's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Cotton Party, the store right underneath our station. It offers contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years. I should have interviewed them too, huh? In the heart of downtown Chico, at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information can be achieved by calling Cotton Party at 893-4923. Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by Sativa Art Glass Studio. I love their octopi glass. Woo! Creating art glass since 1977. Sativa Art Glass Gallery and Studio are at 819 Wall Street in Chico. It's open to the public Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And sativa.com is open 24/7 for all retail purchases and shipping out orders daily. So stay tuned for KZFR. And remember, Ask Dr. Gale would love to hear from you. So back to Bruzy.
And so how does that work, working for your dad or working with your sister? What are the dynamics of a business family conglomeration?
Well, I would say that we're no different than any other family business. It can be difficult. And not so much between myself or my sister, between us and my dad, we always got along fine. You know, he was always the boss. We did what he said. But between the two of us, a little bit of a struggle.
And, sibling.
Right?
Rivalry, yeah.
We wouldn't necessarily always agree on how to do things or the way to do things. And so fortunately, we have several businesses, so we don't have to work in the same building together. So we can get a little bit of separation, each do our own thing and not be on each other's back. So that's worked for us.
And what's your specialty and what's Amy's specialty?
I'm more funeral home, so meeting with families and working funerals. And she is a cemetery, so she knows all the laws and regulations and maps, and she knows all of the different sections and the unique difficulties that we might come across with old historic sections, and she knows all of that, so...
So you're like the people person, and she's kind of like the engineering person in a way.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Is there only one cemetery in Chico, and is there any danger of running out of space?
There's two cemeteries in Chico. There's Chico Cemetery on Mangrove Avenue and Glen Oaks Memorial Park on Midway and Hagen Lane.
Hmm.
And there is not a danger of running out of room, even in Chico Cemetery. If you drive by on Mangrove Avenue and look in, it looks like it's full.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
But it's not. There's almost 5 acres of undeveloped ground inside Chico Cemetery. So we're filling in the developed areas, most of the developed areas. We're developing a new section right by the front gate. That's being mapped and put together to start selling graves right there. And then there are areas in the back all along behind by the junior high school where the Shapiro Pool used to be. All of that back there was, when we took it over, was an olive orchard.
Mm.
And then by the back gate, the Washington Gate, is some area also. Plus, it mixed in. All of the developed areas still have graves in, not all of them, most of them do, graves interspersed in each section.
What's the most unusual headstone carving you've ever seen, if you have?
Well, the angel at Chico Cemetery is pretty special.
Mm.
Yeah. It's not a headstone per se. There is a family name, the Simpson family name, and then they put this sculpture in their family plot. But that's probably the most prominent one that I've seen in Chico.
Mm-hmm.
That is
right. I mean, if you go to the East Coast, it's wonderful to see the so and so had 8 children that died in childbirth and died in 1720 or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you see any changes in terms of deciding whether to be cremated or buried or put under a tree or ashes scattered? Is there any change in how we honor the body?
Well, there's been a long progression towards cremation, away from burial, traditional burial, to cremation. People will still bury cremated remains, but not at the rate that they did 50 years ago. And our rate of cremation is higher in California than it would be, say, in the Midwest or in the South.
That's interesting. Do you hear, I'm reading about ecological burials where you're buried under a tree or something ecological. I'm not really clear on what that is.
Mm-hmm. Green burial.
Green burial. Yeah, green what burial. Is that?
It's an idea that maybe you try to live your life to have a low impact on things, low carbon footprint, and so you would take that into consideration in your burial also. And so you can take it to the nth degree, whatever degree you want. And cremation is not necessarily a carbon friendly final disposition. Burial would be, and if you are going to be buried in the most green way, which may or may not be available to you, the most green way would be to be buried without embalming, without a casket, just maybe in a shroud, non-synthetic fiber, right? So natural fiber, cloth, in the ground, not too deep, because the roots of plants don't go down 6 feet. If you got buried 6 feet down, nothing's going to be able to use your stored energy. But if you're buried just under the surface, maybe a foot or 2 feet, the trees, the grasses, the plants and bushes there would be able to use your remains to grow. So that would be the most green. That's not very available, though.
You have two children. How old are they, and are they in line to be in the business?
They're not in line to be in the business. They're 23 and 25. And we have, to tell you the truth, never really encouraged them to be in the business. We've found it to be difficult. And our business is big enough that we wouldn't want to put it on them. That's too much.
Difficult in terms of the financial structure or in dealing with grieving people, or both?
I wouldn't say grieving people is a problem. That's just part of the business. But complying with state regulation, employees, we have almost 30 employees. So it's a big thing to manage. There's three of us doing it, myself, my wife, and my sister, and it's all we can do. The idea of retiring and saying, here you go, good luck, just was never part of the plan. We wouldn't do that to our kids.
And Amy has a child, too, so she feels
she's young. She's 14, I think. And I don't know exactly the conversations that they've had, but I think she feels the same that we do. Yeah, my wife and I.
Yeah. So that's why you sold it to a corporation.
We did, yeah. So for years, it's been part of our plan to eventually partner with a large company to take over, relieve us of some worries and liabilities, and so we did that in November last year. So we're still here managing for them, and I think they want us to continue that. So we're still pretty young. One thing that we thought about in selling was that it was better to do it before we needed to, before one of us got sick. Or something happened, and so we didn't have to sell. We're still, you know, in our 50s, early 50s. My sister's 51, I think. I'm 53. And so it was a good time. Good time to do it, and a good company to partner with, we've found. We worked with them for a year putting it together, and now it's been about 7 months, so 8 months, I guess.
Hi. You've lived in Chico all your life.
Yeah.
So how have you seen the business scene and the Chico scene change, evolve?
The funeral business?
No, just Chico.
Business scene. I don't know. I'm not
or the
sure. Maybe
the
I'm
Chico.
Really in tune with the business scene.
What people usually talk about is it's gotten bigger, more traffic. Don't have Pioneer Parade anymore. oh, the malls, I don't know, anything like that that strikes you, that, or is DeChico seem pretty much the same?
It seems the same. I think it's grown slow enough for me that I don't have any complaints. You know, the idea of living in a small town, smaller town, is appealing, but my family's all here. A lot of people want to move out of state, but I don't know where I would go, and everybody's here, so we're Chico people, so we're gonna stick it out here. And I don't feel like Chico's a different place now than it was 30 years ago.
Last question is, if you were giving advice to a young person who wanted to start a business, any business, what would you say to them based on your business background?
I would say the key is employees, keeping happy employees. I think a lot of people just want to hire someone and bark orders at them and expect them to pull their weight. And maybe that might have been the case, that you could treat people that way 30 years ago and keep them. But today you really have to stay on top of being in touch with employees and making sure that everything is going well for them. There's a lot of jobs out there. They can do anything. They can move easily from one career to another. So if you're not keeping employees, you're making life difficult on yourself.
Because then you have to retrain, and that's a lot of time and money. Yeah. Are you and your wife able to, at home, say, okay, no more talking about work, business?
No. No, it's probably that way in any business, but in the funeral business, our business is 24 hours a day. So even if we tried to not do that, there are people, we have employees working or on call every day of the year, 24 hours a day. And so it does not end. It keeps going.
Oh,
the phone will always ring in the middle of the night.
Someone dies, and then immediately they call you and say, help me deal with this body and set up this and that.
Well, it's not always me. We have people on an on-call schedule. But, you know, if they need help, eventually it does come to me. So, yeah. And the other night, someone called in the middle of the night. They lost a family member out of town and needed some help. So talked him through that.
So it's really a good service.
I think so. They told me that they, even though they weren't using us directly, that they had a real connection here over a long period of time. And so they felt comfortable calling me and asking the answering service in the middle of the night to put them through to Mark. And they did, and it's not a big deal. I get calls like that. So, yeah, no, it's satisfying being able to help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Perfect. So Phil Collier's was started in 1871. I can't believe that. What can you tell us about the beginnings?
You're listening to KCRI.
A little bit of the beginning was not just a hardware store. It's more of a general store. A gentleman from Yuba City built the building on a request from John Bidwell, because John Bidwell's office was across the street. According to the little bit of historical things we can find, General Bidwell thought the downtown was moving away from him and he wanted more at this end of town. So he convinced Mr. Jones to build the building and put a general store downstairs, and put half of the upstairs was Masonic Lodge and the other half of the upstairs second floor was Oddfellows. So they built a two-story building in 1871.
And how much of the building that exists in 2021 is part of the original structure? Like the Blue Room Theater and...
The Blue Room Theater, that part is the original 1871 part. So The upstairs then was divided in half. The other part of the building, the second part of the building, was built in 1926, also by the, this time by the Masonic Lodge, and it was a three-story building. And they put a general store downstairs, same thing. There was a tractor at the bottom, tractor retailer at the back of the store. And then the second floor of the new building was a cafeteria for the Masonic Lodge. Full kitchen, full everything. Third floor was a lodge meeting facility. And then the Odd Fellows were still on the other side. Eventually that went over, and the original side of the building, the two stories, was used for the youth program in the Masonic Lodge. The Job's Daughters and what's the Masonic? D. Malay.
Right. I adore the floors here. So are they the original floors? How old are they?
Best of our knowledge, they're the original floors. The interesting thing is when we've done some remodeling, like upstairs, and the wood is absolutely fantastic. The carpenters that take it out are just amazed. It's just straight grain, beautiful wood. They all want to save it, and they do take it. Mm. So.
Are you any relation to the Jones family?
No, no relationship at all. There's been different owners throughout the time, different names of the store. So, no, I just was one of those lucky guys that happened to start working here when I was going to Chico State and then continued on from there.
Who was the owner then when you started?
There was a partnership. Jack Bowen and Cecil Hitt were the two partners at that time.
And when was that, when you started working?
I started working here in 1956, the summer of 1956.
What were you majoring in at Chico State?
Education.
Were you a teacher?
Yep, taught for 3 years and worked here on Friday nights and Saturdays.
And what did you teach?
Seventh grade, core program at Chico Junior High School.
To me, that's the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life is teach junior high students because they're so giggly.
I always had a philosophy. You had a better luck with seventh graders. Seventh graders you could intimidate for the year. Eighth graders were sort of obnoxious. And then you had a little leverage on ninth graders because they wanted to go to high school.
The ninth graders, in my experience, were very civilized. They came back totally different than the eighth graders. Yeah. So what made you switch after those 3 years of teaching? You worked here full time?
No. That's when I was offered to come in as a partner after those 3 years. So I came in the partner 3 years, 1963.
So how many partners were there?
Cecil Hitt, the original partner, stayed. And I came in as a partner with him. And then Cecil had a heart attack in 1970, 71. And then he retired. So from that time on, I've had the store, or family has had the store.
And how is your family involved?
Well, my sons now operate the store. They own the store. I'm sort of out of it.
You have two sons?
Three.
They all work in the store?
They have all worked in the store. One of them is leaving because of some problems that he has to take care of with an estate problem. So he may not be with us much longer.
How was that working as a family? I mean, it's a different relationship, boss, employee, father, son. How did that work out?
Fortunately, it worked out. The only way we felt it could work is each person was given their assignment. So one took care of hardware, one took care of electrical, one took care of the books, one took care of homewares, so they didn't overlap each other trying to do it. So it worked that way, and then about every 2 years or 3 years, they'd switch.
Wow.
So that one wouldn't always be stuck doing the same thing.
So they learned the whole store.
They knew the whole store, absolutely.
And did you have regular meetings to talk about where we want to go and how it's going and that kind of thing?
Oh, you always have little side meetings.
They were kind of informal.
Oh, yeah, and then we'd have meetings, usually around a dinner or something, and everybody would spout their piece and away we'd go.
Mm-hmm. What about your wife, the
always
wives
tried
the
to
sons?
Keep the wives out of the store.
Because?
Just that we just thought it would work better if it was just the boys doing it. And the wives all had jobs. So it really worked good that way. They don't necessarily try to socialize all that much together. They do, you know, holidays and that type of thing, but the rest of the time, no. So they all have their independent lives away from the store.
Mm-hmm. And what's been the influence of online marketing, the big box stores? I don't know when, like, Home Depot and Lowe's came to Chico. Do you remember?
I remember them coming because they brought in a group of about 7-8 guys that went through our store. And
just to see what your inventory was?
Right. And when they left, one of the guys said, "Don't worry, you'll survive. You're a unique hardware store. We're not going to kill you." They cut into us a little bit, but they didn't really just totally kill us like we thought they might. The online is a much more troubling type of thing. It's pandemic didn't help, but more and more people like the convenience of that, where it can just bounce on their porch and they don't have to shop. They don't have to fight traffic. They don't have parking meters. They don't have all the other things that go with being downtown.
But what you have is I can come in and say, I need to have some rat repellent, and I want something that's like this, this, and this, and your person can say, well, we've heard really good things about that, and you can't get that from the big box stores or
online. That's the only thing that's going to make you survive is the personal service. That's what we felt. That's why we've always geared it to have personal service.
Like you have so many more employees on the floor per
right.
square foot than the big box stores.
Absolutely.
Where you have to look for 10 minutes to find someone to help you.
And that's the only way we're going to survive is to have some sort of, that's our bailiwick that we picked was the personal service. That we thought would be the easiest to beat them at. If Home Depot wanted to cut prices, they're so big they could cut prices in Chico, and all their other stores would carry their loss. Lowe's has the same thing. So they can do things that we're just too small to do. That probably the only thing we've got against them is personal service. A lot of products we match them item for item. Some products, if they want to sell it low, they're going to just sell it low and go with it. They're across the board things. Some of the things were lower than they are. Some of them were higher than they are. But we have no intention of fighting them on a price situation.
The other thing is if I can come here and buy one screw.
Right.
And I can't do that at the big box stores.
That's true. That's always been our big connection is you can buy one of something, two of something. And they've got to have packaging. They've got to have a high production per square foot because it's volume that they're after.
Right.
Yes, they're good competitors.
So you're staying in business. You're thriving,
sure.
Especially. And it seems like what COVID did, it made people really focus on home development, remodeling. So you didn't see a pickup because of that?
We saw a beginning of that where we had a lot of people buying homewares things and some barbecues and that type of stuff.
And baking, making bread, stuff.
All the things you can think of that you do canning. I mean, canning jars, the whole United States couldn't get canning jars. People were canning things that they never thought they'd can in their lives. So, yes, people put in their own gardens. They did all of these things. We don't know what's going to happen next. It'll be interesting because the whole dynamics of retail sales have changed a little bit. We're really interested to see if people will start shopping downtown again because they've been basically away for a year. We were fortunate enough to be designated an essential store, so we did not have to close during the COVID-19. Everybody had to wear masks and do all the procedures, but we didn't have to close. So that helped us in that degree. But we're not seeing the traffic in downtown right now. We're really interested in seeing what happens when Chico State opens up again and the schools open up again, because that changes the whole traffic patterns.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, parents have to take their kids to the high school. Chico State's floating. I mean, there's just a I don't know how many employees does Chico State have, 4,000, 5,000 people? I mean, you're taking care of 16,000 students, so if you take all their plan off, their janitors and their faculty and everything put together, that's a big influx of people.
Right.
And with all the students coming back, we're hoping.
Yeah.
All the apartments get occupied, that they also spend money, because they do have money, or seem to have.
Yeah.
That might make a big change. I hope it changes the whole dynamics of what's going on.
So are you a corporation or a limited partnership, or how did
you... Corporation.
And you, the corporation owns this whole building complex?
No. The corporation owns the business. We did not put real estate into the corporation, because real estate in the corporation is sort of hard to get in and out of.
Mm.
The building is owned by a partnership, uniquely. Guess who owns the partnership?
The boys.
No, the boys and dad. And that one. So, yeah, it's called Lucena Partners, and we own the building.
Got it.
Yeah.
You've really been at the heart of Chico over decades. Any ways that you've seen it change for good or for bad?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, well, you asked me to think of stores that have been around. All the stores when I started in the 50s and 60s. Hardware and Collier Hardware, all downtown.
Wow.
So drastic changes. I mean, we had Sierra Stationers that had been there for years. We had shoe stores. Find me a shoe store in downtown Chico, other than athletic type things. I mean, a total shoe store. So the whole retail has changed. Primarily downtown today, we feel, is a restaurant and bar combination. Retail, we have some great independent people that have been in business. That we've some jewelry stores that are really good that have stayed in business.
Clifford's?
Well, Clifford's is gone.
Oh.
Remember, they were here for years and years. Mm. You've got Kirk's and you got Madeline Nolte over at Cabrera Ferrar jewelry store. I was thinking the other day when you mentioned all those stores, the only other store that I can remember that goes back to the 1900s is Pullen's Cyclery.
Oh, Pullen's.
Yeah,
oh.
Right there in the corner of, what is that, 8th and
There's an interview
Main.
With Pullen's
right.
Cyclery on
so there,
my
there's
YouTube channel.
A Northern it's Star Mills.
It's there.
Collier's. Bruzzi's is old, but not 19th century. Right. And Schubert's is 1940s.
Right. I think I talked to Steve from Pullen's. I think it goes back to about 1910, 13, somewhere in that range.
And is that family owned or not?
I think Stephen owns it. It's gone through different families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not an outside source.
So last question, if you were talking to someone who wanted to be their own entrepreneur and start their own retail store now, what advice would you give them?
Think hard. If they've got a great concept or whatever it is that they have, probably the biggest problem a lot of people make is not having enough money.
To get through that first year of not making
first,
it.
How about the first 5 years?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the first year is great, but you've got to survive, I would say, 3 to 5 years of really going at it to make it. And that's a big case of financing. You just can't come in on... I don't think you can survive anymore on just a shoestring.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the restaurants try it. If you notice how many restaurants turn over and... Like, you know, they can just really do well for a year, maybe a year and a half, and then if it becomes a little stale or slows down, they don't have enough to carry them through that next wave. It's difficult to do.
Mm.
Product would be something that would really be a difficult thing to do.
Mm. Do you by chance have any old pictures of Collier's?
Yep. Do you have?
How do we see them?
We have them right here.
All right. Let's look at them.
pictures, or you can see them on my YouTube channel.
I don't know how you want to do this.
Interviews in video form.
Maybe if we put them on the desk.
And you'll see lots of interviews, including the pictures from college.
There's one.
And what year is this from?
That's way back there. I don't know what year that was taken. Quite obviously, it was taken before 1928 because the other building's not there. So if you put those side by side with that.
Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and
I lost all my literature. We're starting a search.
What year do you think this is?
It'd have to be after 1928. We've had some people try to tell us what year cars those were. So I know
it's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time.
Peanut butter jelly time.
Baseball bat. Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
Now way up, way up, way up, way up. Now there you go, there you go, there you go, there you go.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly.
To the peanut butter jelly,
peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
To the peanut butter jelly,
peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
Now break it down and freeze.
Now break it down and freeze.
Now break it down and freeze.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly.
To the peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
To the peanut butter.